Welcome back. In this session, the topic, who should be a church planter? Well, would your church sponsor this man as a church planter? He was smart, but his years of academic studies had taken him away from regular, hard-working people for a long time. So strike one against him. We need someone who can relate to the common man, woman. I don't think he's right for the job, objects a member of the church planting committee. He's still a young convert. Some of the pastors still haven't gotten over that incident he was involved in. I don't know. Isn't there someone else we could get? Strike two from the veteran pastor. We need someone the other churches will want to support. And then there's that physical problem. We need someone who will be more, more appealing. Someone who will represent us all in a more positive manner. Too bad John Mark isn't a little older. He'd be a good candidate. Strike three. Well, what a few like that now would deny the Apostle Paul the charter member status of the Church Planters Hall of Fame. Well, who's to say who can church plant and who can't? With the new focus on church planting, new tools for assessing the potential of would-be church planters have been developed. Some of these tools came about because of failure. People who should have been able to start churches did not succeed. And to avoid additional failures, these denominations and church planting movements began investigating common elements of those who succeeded and those who did not. But what does Matthew 16:18 say? I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. In our failure in church planting in Nashville, I'm comforted in knowing Jesus was still building his church. People became believers, lives were changed, the kingdom was expanded, even if the results were not all that I had hoped would happen. Well, in looking at a church planter profile, my hope is to encourage honest introspection. What areas of weaknesses are in my life, can I do anything about this weakness, and if so, what, and B, if it is obvious I'm not cut out for church planting, what can I do to assist church planting? I appreciate the attitude of a local pastor who invited our daughter to speak at his church where he was going to pass the plate for a missions offering for her as she was raising support to go to Vienna, Austria to teach at Vienna Christian School. The pastor said, I don't feel called to go there myself, but I want to help those who are called to do what God's called them to do. You see, there's no neutral ground in church planting because it is the most effective method of evangelism. If we're not active participants in church planting, then let's assist those who are. If that language sounds familiar, it's because much of the church has talked about world mission in that way. If you're not going, help someone who is going. Well, church planters are missionaries. As Ed Stetzer says, if church planting isn't about missions, it's only about rearranging Christians. You can start a new church using attractive programs, dynamic worship, fancy PowerPoint displays, but if all you're doing is drawing other Christians from other churches, that's not missions. We call that sheep stealing or swapping chairs on the Titanic. Church planting is about missions reaching out to the unchurched. End quotation. Who then is the most effective at reaching the unchurched? Well, those are the ones who are most needed in church planting. Maybe they're a little rough around the edges. Maybe they have a lot to learn about theology or administration. They can learn those things. But effectiveness in reaching the unchurched through one-on-one relationships, keep your eyes out for that trait in a potential church planter above all, because that's what church planting is all about, reaching the unchurched. The list of competencies for church planters I'm about to offer you indicates the range of skills and knowledge a church planter needs. But if someone is not able to relate to unchurched people, the skills and knowledge will have little impact. So what if you can organize an event? What are you going to do to draw a crowd? The list of competencies, 21 competencies for church planters, are necessary skills and knowledge, but keep the perspective of relationship building with unchurched people in mind. The skills and knowledge could be shown by a church staff member with a good job performance rating, and have zero unchurched people skills. This is what's often tricky about church planting. An associate pastor may get antsy to go start his own church, but can he fish in the pagan ocean when the only fishing he has done was in the friendly, well-stocked church kiddie pool? Sure, he was a whiz at organizing new programs, even starting new home groups and multiplying groups, but where did the people come from? They were already coming to church. He just got the ones already coming to come to something else through using all the resources of an established church. And just speaking from my own experience of kiddie pond fishing and how it felt to be out there in the great big ocean with my little rowboat and cane fishing pole. I know about this. Now, the 21 competencies for a church planter. First is to understand the need and challenge for church planting in North America. Second, to understand the biblical basis for church planting. We've been talking about the Great Commission and other references. But the biblical basis for church planting. Third, to understand the gifts and characteristics of a good church planter. I'll be speaking more about that as we go along. But gifts, characteristics. Four, to be able to develop a vision for church planting and to be able to communicate it. So like the guy that I told you about who told his stories, that he had a vision, saying, this is why I'm here. This is what we're here to do. Be able to communicate that vision. Five, be able to develop the core values of a church planter. The core values. What is it that you're about? Number six, to be able to articulate a mission statement. Be able to articulate a mission statement. Number seven, be able to gather and analyze demographics and psychographics for a particular community. Again, we'll be looking at some of these skills, but doing your research, doing your homework about the area where you're wanting to go church plant. Number eight, be able to identify a target group. You know, who can you most effectively go after? Who are you after? What's your target group? Number nine, understand church planting relationships and sponsorship. If you realize that you don't want to just go out on your own to do this, then what kind of relationships and sponsorships do you need? Number 10, be able to build a core group. Number 11, be able to select and implement community cultivative events. What kind of launch events, what kind of activities are you going to do to let people know that you're there? Number 12, understand how to use media and advertising methods. Number 13, understand the financial issues of church planting. Number 14, be able to build a church planting team. Number 15, be able to design a structure system for a church plant. That is, has to do with outreach, assimilation, ministry teams, cells, cell groups, and so forth. Again, a structure system. Be able to design a structure system for a church plant. Number 16, understand how to prepare for a launch, to develop leaders, to conduct pre-launch services and training. Number 17, be able to choose a proper meeting place. Number 18, be able to plan and implement a launch service. Number 19, be able to propose a 12 to 18 month strategy plan and budget. Number 20, be able to understand the principle that whatever happens, make it part of your plan. Now perhaps you know pastors who can do all of the above, but they still might not be effective at church planting. The inability to relate to unchurched people matter again. This matter comes up again. Or because of character flaws or other issues. And sometimes it's an intangible thing, like the story that told about Charles Spurgeon, and how from time to time one of his preacher boys, as he called him, would indicate interest in starting a new church. And Spurgeon would sometimes say, sometimes look at the young man and simply say, son, I just don't see it. We see assessment tools are needed. Church planting is hard work. Some estimates about the rate of failure in church planting is as high as 2/3, 66%. And that high rate of failure has caused some denominations and church networks to pull way back on their plans for church planting. Assessment can aid in the church planting process. Is this God's will for my life? Rather than seeing assessment as jumping through hoops set out by denominational bureaucrats to discourage church planters, an assessment process can serve to do the following. Give the potential church starters an opportunity to assess themselves, with trained persons helping them to see their strengths and limitations. Second, an assessment enables a potential church starter to improve abilities and correct limitations. Third, this kind of assessment can help identify the type of church planting effort that fits the potential church planter. And fourth, assessment can help those who do not have a call or giftedness for church planting focus on areas of ministry where there is a proper fit. Let's see, if the call to church plant is genuinely from God, the call will withstand the scrutiny of the church planting process. as someone who went out to church plant before an assessment process was in place in our church planting network, I can vouch for the wisdom of assessment. There are different ways of doing assessment, including a self-assessment to see if a person has the characteristics identified as important for church planting. The assessment interview is a common method with mission agencies, denominations, and church sending churches. Just thinking about answering 4 hours of questions related to commitment to Christ, call, family, gifting, vision, so forth, is too much for some people. But again, the assessment is not to prevent church planting, but to give an honest appraisal of a person's potential as a church planter. The assessment, connected with an internship program, has proven to be the most successful way of preparing church planters. Through interning, the candidate receives direct feedback related to actual job performance. Statistical evidence indicates that those who have done an internship are more likely to succeed as church planters than those who have not. Dr. Charles Ridley was asked by a group of denominations to find out how to better screen church planter candidates. Dr. Ridley began by gathering a group of successful church planters and studying them for common characteristics. From a long list of items, he narrowed the list to 13 characteristics, with the first 6 being knockout categories, 6 absolutely essential categories. The assessment interview, a 4-hour behavioral interview, addresses the 13 characteristics through questions that probe if the candidate has a history of starting things in church, in secular situations, in businesses. Well, here's the list of 13 church planter characteristics, and I'll say more about each item after giving the full list. So let me just give you the full list to begin with. Visioning capacity. 2, intrinsically motivated. 3, creates ownership of ministry. 4, relates to lost people and other unchurched people. 5, spousal cooperation. 6, effectively builds relationships. 7, committed to church growth. 8, responsive to the community. 9, one who utilizes giftedness of others. 10, flexible and adaptable. 11, builds group cohesiveness. 12, resilience. And 13, exercises faith. And so let's just say some more about each of these items now. First, visioning capacity. Here's someone who has shown that there's a history of demonstrating ability to formulate, express, and implement a clear and compelling vision. Being a person who projects into the future beyond the present. Developing a theme which highlights the vision and philosophy of ministry. Someone who's persuasively selling the vision to the people. Who approaches challenges as opportunities rather than obstacles. Someone who is coping effectively with non-visioning elements in the group. Someone who's not erecting artificial walls or limits, either overtly or subconsciously. Someone who's establishing a clear church identity related to the theme and vision. Someone who believes in God's capacity to do greater things. Questions that may be asked related to visioning capacity would be questions like, when was the last time you created an opportunity out of an obstacle? How did you create that opportunity? Tell me about a time you started something from the beginning. Books like Aubrey Malfer's Developing a Vision for Ministry, or George Barna's The Power of Vision, or Rick Warner's The Purpose-Driven Church, assist in developing vision capacity. It is not enough for you to have it in your heart what kind of church you want to plant. The vision has to be articulated in such a way so that other people can buy into the vision. Listen to definitions of vision by Malfers and Barna and reflect on your own ability to cast vision or on the ability of the church planter candidate. Malfers calls vision a clear and challenging picture of the future of a ministry as you believe it can be and must be. That's from his book, Developing a Vision for Ministry. As Malfer says, a vision is clear when those who are a part of the ministry understand it well enough to articulate it to someone else. It was gratifying that night at my friend's ordination service to hear different people articulate facets of what I knew to be important to my friend. They had caught the vision, and now they were helping other people catch the vision. Barna uses similar language in his definition of vision. Vision for ministry is a clear mental picture of a preferable future imparted by God to his chosen servants and is based upon an accurate understanding of God, self, and circumstances. That's from Barna's book, The Power of Vision. Well, notice the focus on the future in Barna's definition. A church planter cannot be about maintaining the status quo. When you start from scratch, there's no quo to maintain. As Barna says, vision concentrates on the future. It focuses on thinking ahead rather than on dwelling upon or seeking to replicate the past. The means to success in ministry is to focus upon God and to be committed fully to His vision for your ministry and to do what He will do with you and through you in the future. Okay, this the second characteristic of a church planter, that of being intrinsically motivated. The second essential characteristic is that someone who is working out of a deep sense of call or mission, intrinsically motivated. Someone who has a deep desire to do things well and a commitment to do things right as unto the Lord. That there's a stick-to-itiveness, and a persistence. Here's someone with initiative and determination. There's a willingness to work hard, work harder and smarter. Someone who's a self-starter with a willingness to build from nothing. Someone who can anticipate new projects. So here are questions in an assessment interview that could probe for intrinsic motivation would include, what has given you the greatest feeling of accomplishment in your life? How was that effort initiated and what obstacles did you overcome in carrying them out? When did you really work hard to accomplish something? And so you think through and you dialogue about these matters. These kinds of questions may also be helpful in interviewing potential staff members. I've known senior pastors who were surprised to add people to staff and find out that people had to be led around by the hand to get anything done. We need self-starters, people who can see what needs to be done and go do it. Next characteristic is that of creating ownership of ministry. Third essential. Someone who's able to involve other people quickly in seeing the ministry as our ministry. By helping people to buy in and feel responsible for the growth and success of the church, of the group. Here's someone who gains commitment of the people to the vision. Helping to establish a group identity. Avoiding imposing unrealistic goals for which the group cannot claim ownership. And someone who's willing to give their ideas away to someone else. Say, go run with this. Questions related to ownership in the assessment interview would include, tell me about someone you encouraged to move from nominal to active involvement in some activity. How did you get the person to move from off the sidelines? I've known business owners who complain about not being able to get good help when in actuality the owner was not able to foster a shared environment where the employee felt a sense of ownership. Companies that offer stock options and other incentives regularly score high in employee satisfaction surveys. Fourth essential characteristic is being able to relate to lost people and other unchurched people. Well, this characteristic is demonstrated through communicating in a style that is understood by lost and unchurched people. Through understanding the psychology or mentality of lost and unchurched people. Here's moving and functioning in the personal space of lost people without fear. Someone who's getting to know lost and unchurched people on a regular basis, on a personal level. Here's breaking through the barriers erected by the lost and unchurched. Handling crises faced by the lost and unchurched. Here's someone who's intentionally seeking out lost and unchurched people. It's been observed that sometimes when we spend so much time using church language, we cannot communicate with normal people. We have to be able to communicate with them in order to connect and find that point of contact. Obviously, we're not able to live their lifestyle, but we've got to be able to connect to the unchurched culture around us, as Ed Stetzer says. Questions in an assessment interview about being able to relate to lost and unchurched people might be questions like, in what ways do you typically associate with lost and unchurched people? At various times in my own life, if I'd been asked that question, I would have had difficulty citing ways of being around lost and unchurched people. For example, while on staff at a large church, I was only around church members all the time. Office hours with other staff members, church youth activities, church sports teams. About the only contact I had with anyone not in the church was with our duplex apartment neighbor if we happened to be going to our cars at the same time. It was real culture shock for me several years later to be around people on the job in one of my tent-making secular jobs in the corporate lunchroom and hear co-workers talk like I'd heard people talk in the locker room in junior high. I must acknowledge that I did not relate well to my co-workers. I wanted to be a light in a dark place, but often took my little candle and my lunch and went off and had lunch by myself. Someone who has greatly helped me understand how to relate to unchurched people while being a witness for Christ is my friend who is a police chaplain. I've been with him at several places in Atlanta, and when those police officers see him, they're delighted to speak to him and give him a big bear hug. They know he cares about them, and the feeling is mutual with the way they act when they see him. If you're not currently around unchurched people on a regular basis, find ways to expand your network of friends. Join a health club. Get involved in civic activities. Volunteer to coach a recreation department team. Take a class at a home improvement store. Invite a neighbor over for dessert. Take the time to get to know a waitress or a waiter. Get to know your kids, the parents of your kids at school. You get the idea. Find ways to get to know people. Ted Haggard's book on fly fishing and interest groups has a lot of good ideas about ways to connect with people based on common interest. A good rule of thumb for the church planter is to spend time with two different groups of people, leaders and lost people. You're to develop the leaders and reach the lost for Christ. Think about it this way. Jesus spent time with future leaders, the disciples, and he spent time with lost people, like the woman at the well. A pastor friend had an experience that was like a reaffirmation of his call to ministry. He had gone on an errand to a grocery store and started talking to the produce manager there in the fruits and vegetables department, and ended up getting to pray for the produce manager. It made the pastor's day. He had lent a listening ear and caring heart to a man who had a rough day, and in doing so, the pastor had one of those, yeah, this is what it's all about moments. It was a divine appointment. Well, I've encouraged home group leaders to take the group bowling or to play putt-putt golf. Just get out where other people are and let the world see Christians together having fun and open the circle so others can come inside. In what ways do you associate with unchurched people? The way we answer that question will not only say something about the way we go about church planting, it also says something about how committed to the Great Commission we are.